John Williams here on the Wintrust Business Lunch with producer Pete and Terry Savage, the money lady at terrysavage.com. Terry, lots to talk about today, or at least we've been talking a lot of financial stuff before you arrived on the show today. I don't know if you want to chime in on that.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I didn't hear the whole conversation, so I'm going to come at this cold. But I think this is a really interesting idea, and certainly it is part of a really long-term demographic trend. I'm going to call this the revenge of the baby boomers. Back when we were a much more unselfish society, when the baby boom generation came along and when they started going to school in the 50s, early 50s, that's when we built schools all across the country. And as the baby boomers grew up, we built colleges and universities to absorb this huge population bulge. And then in the job market, when you think about it, that was the start of the, that wasn't the start of, but that was the increase of the, quote, white-collar jobs, always before America had been a kind of blue-collar factory, whatever. But the baby boom generation took that to new levels. And now we've seen, of course, the baby boom put strains on Social Security. Now, this is an interesting proposition because the fact is, we're living longer. And what we have learned is two things. Number one, and I've been talking about long-term care insurance forever, and we've learned that most people either didn't see the need or couldn't afford the cost, or those who did watched as the insurance companies jacked up the premiums. So long-term care insurance, even though like some people paid off their student loans, why should others get a break? Even though I have fully paid up long-term care insurance, why should others get a break? Because it's really good for society. So the fact is that on a practical basis, doing something about partial coverage of in-home care is far less expensive than the crisis that we face pretty immediately of trying to institutionalize every senior who needs some help with activities but could remain at home. Because once you're in a nursing home or assisted living, that pretty much assumes 24-hour care. That's like 3-on-1, 4-on-1. And it's very costly setting, not to mention it's not optimal. So I think out of left field, I think Kamala Harris hit on something. Yes, it'll be costly. But since when did any politician worry about costs where we've got a huge budget deficit this year going to be close to $2 trillion? Remember when Everett Dirksen said famously, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money. So a trillion. I think that even though Medicare does not pay very little anyway for home health care, but Medicaid, which is the state program, which is subsidized by the federal government, is what impoverished seniors require when they can no longer live at home, although they might be able to live in a place where they had part-time help.
Yeah.
So one way or another, the Medicaid program is paying for it now, and this seems like a potentially much more humane approach and financially practical approach to dealing with the cost of aging in place.
Right,
so they would get my vote on that.
Thank you. I said when I get to be king, we'll institute something like this. And don't you suppose that while the costs are a concern, it's a real number, we're going to run into those costs anyway. Somehow or another, we're going to have to pick up the slack.
That's exactly. And what's happening is state Medicaid programs are doing that. And then they're putting people in places that are funded or underfunded, supervised or undersupervised. And that's just not the right thing. Whereas, you have people who could live with family if that person could continue to work and someone could come in during the day. That's far less expensive than a 24-hour institutionalized setting and far more preferable.
Terry, I got a note from a listener who said that the siblings are all paying one of the siblings a stipend to help mom and dad. And I think that ought to be tax deductible or maybe co-funded by the government. But if we all are having to care for mom and dad, but that's less expensive than the government or some third party doing it,
I
don't mind that.
There are are very strict rules about Medicare reimbursement right now for the kind of care or any kind of reimbursement for the kind of care a family member, unless they're qualified and unless they work through an agency, et cetera, et cetera. I think, you know, I'd really love to be on the task force that works to put this together if she's elected, because I think there is a point to that, that to the extent that you can relieve the government of a burden it would otherwise have, there ought to be some incentive to you.
Well, you have a friend at Social Security.
I'm not sure they're going to appoint me to the new Medicare at Home task force, but if it happens, I'm going to volunteer.
Terry, we get the normal batch of questions for you and stuff like this. Anything else you want to say?
Yeah, so interestingly, I got a blog post. You can look at all the questions I get at terrysavage.com. And I was catching up over the weekend the last couple of days, and one of them said, when is Dr. Bob going to be on again? For those of you many of you are regular listeners, you know that Dr. Bob Frelich, who is also the owner of the Kane County Cougars and is our forecaster at our Executives Club annual economic forecast, coming around again, that's hard to believe, in mid-January, famously forecast Dow 44,000 last year, and we wondered if we should have put him in a straitjacket and cart him off, came on our air, and gave all kinds of optimistic reasons. So this morning, I sent him an email. I said, Dr. Bob, we may have to take down the statue of the Ceres grain on the Board of Trade building and replace it with one of you. Look at what's going on in the market. Despite all the worst things. War imminent. I mean, really lots of concerns, not only Ukraine, but the Middle East. A very huge uncertainty over U.S. politics and the election. We have the 10-year rates ticking up. More on that later if someone asks an interest rate question. But the rates on which mortgages are set moving up just a bit, despite the Fed's cut. Oil prices not soaring, but up. And my goodness, devastating hurricanes on the horizon. I said to him, what do we need? Pestilence and famine to complete the plagues? And yet the market's up 300-400 points. It's astounding. And I'm waiting for, I would just check my email. He's probably too busy to answer. But I want to leave you with this one thing about the market. I've said this about 3 or 4 times since I discovered it a couple months ago. And that is that incredible election year indicator that when the market is up, and this goes back almost 100 years, when the market is up in the 3 months preceding the election, August, September, and October, 87% of the time, the incumbent party, whichever one it is, retains power. So there.
And it's trending up right now.
Well, we're significantly up in the last three, so far into the 3 months. We're like pretty much halfway through October, and the election is very close. I don't forecast elections, much less the stock market, but it was just an interesting historical thing. If the market's up, the incumbent party, Republican or Democrat, remains in power.
Door County has been explained to me as a real bellwether, and the people up in Door County tell me there are signs everywhere for both candidates. Here's a house question for Terry Savage. The sale of the home and net $400,000 in cash. Should we place it into a new home or take it and invest it in the stock market and mortgage a little more on the next house? You're walking away with $400,000.
Out of the blue, you want me to answer this? I need to know. Here's what I need to know.
You know, you always need to know so much more than I do.
Because you'll make a snap decision. I feel a great weight of the responsibility. Now, if you are, this is Bob. Bob, if you are approaching retirement, I hope you didn't buy your new home in Florida. But anyway, if you want to be in retirement and not have a huge overhead, then I would suggest, first of all, I hope you're holding the current home, your primary residence, in joint name. Because on a joint return, you each exclude $250,000 worth of gains, so you won't have any gains. If it was your home and you had a $400,000 profit, you would need to set some money aside to pay taxes on the amount above $250,000, assuming that was your profit after all your costs were put in.
Like
okay, that's number one.
Yep.
Number two, I don't see any reason at this point in anyone's life to take on more debt. So you'd have to, but certainly what I would not take on debt to invest or speculate in the stock market. So that's an overall view, but your something in your situation might be a little bit different. So consider your taxes, consider your risk tolerance, consider what other savings and retirement savings and investments you have, and consider how nice it would be not to have a mortgage payment, if especially if you're in retirement.
All right, but let me ask you a question. Give me a 30-second answer. What do you think in the next 10 years is going to appreciate more, the S&P 500 or real estate in the Chicago area?
Ooh, you had to say in the Chicago area. I don't know, John.
Okay.
In my lifetime, real estate has been a better investment for me. I'm talking about a long lifetime now, than even all the stock market and S&P investing I've done. For some reason, you can easily mark that to the market. But you put a geographical quirk in this, and a lot depends on what happens
you gotta live somewhere
in our Chicago politics.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the point. That's definitely not the point. I would have said that maybe real estate had the edge in general, but I'm not so sure in Chicago, to tell you the truth.
I think that's a fair answer. That's Terry Savage. She's the money lady at terrysavage.com. WGN Radio. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Terry Savage on Wednesdays here from terrysavage.com, the money lady and the author of Social Security Horror Stories. We want Terry to be on the Medicaid and Medicare committees as well. But there's only one Terry Savage, so here we go. More questions for you, Terry. Anything else you want to pop out?
No. But I'm glad we talked about those things.
We have a daughter in college. We've contributed to her out-of-state 529 plan for 20 years. And we're using that for her tuition, although it's not enough to cover room and board. So we're paying out of pocket. Could we put $20,000 into a new Illinois 529 plan before the end of the year to get the tax deduction? Or is there a waiting period before you can withdraw?
No, well, I know, but you only get a tax deduction on your Illinois return for up to $10,000 of contribution to a plan. And, I mean, Illinois taxes are high, but it's not going to be probably worth it. You could put the money in. You could get a deduction on your Illinois tax return, the 2024 return you'll file next year. And you'd have to leave it. I'm not sure exactly how long the money has to be left in, but you could use it for the senior year. But, it's a lot of fooling around for a teeny bit of a help.
Can you use it for room and board as opposed to tuition?
Yeah. A 529 plan can be used for qualified expenses that include room and board. Yeah, absolutely. And, it never matters. It doesn't matter which state plan you use. And many people have used plans that are lower cost plans. Illinois' plan has been revamped a couple of times, and it gets pretty good ratings. But for a while, when I started my granddaughter's plan, I used the Vanguard plan for a different state because I knew the costs were low. So it doesn't really matter where, except that Illinois does give Illinois residents a tax break for up to $10,000 in any one year.
Ask Terry. Today, the 10-year Treasury is paying just over 4%. I've got cash in a Roth IRA. A CD matured the other day. 4% with no tax is basically 5% in my bracket. Does this seem like a decent place to put it?
Wait. That 4% on a 10-year Treasury, 4.05 at the moment, and is taxable income, just not income taxable on your state return. So it's taxable income on Treasury bills and Treasury notes. Treasury bills are 2 years or less maturity. Notes are IOUs that pay every 6 months from 2 years to 10 years and longer term bonds. So number one, don't be confused. You don't pay state income taxes on Treasury interest, but you do pay federal taxes. Number two, do you really want to tie your money up for 4%, 4.06%, if you could go out in the bond market and have your broker buy them for you? Do you really want to tie your money up for 10 years? Let me just take a quick look, but
you don't like 4%?
The six-month bill is about 4.35%, 4.4%, and that's auctioned every Monday. So you run the risk that when it matures in 6 months, rates will be lower. But I'm not sure I would tie my money up for 10 years at 4%. Now, I remember, just lest you follow my advice too closely, I remember long, long ago when rates were very high, and I told my mother she could not buy, I think it was a 20-year Treasury bond at that time, yielding, I think it was 12 or 13%, because She didn't want to have her money tied up in case inflation was even higher. That was back in the early 80s.
You don't like 4% for 10 years, huh?
No. I would like to have a mortgage at 4% for 10 years. I'd like to pay 4% or 10 years on a mortgage. That's not happening now. It's about 6, it's ticked up to close to 6.5%, 6.25%, 6.5%.
Well, why don't you like that? Because if you get 4% growth for 10 years and inflation is below 4%, you don't know what the markets are
going to do for 10 years. Wait. Okay. Watch this. If you gave me a guarantee that inflation would be below 3%, I would definitely buy a 10-year 4% note. But look at what's going on. We have budget deficits. Our total national debt's going to be bigger than our gross domestic product. For this is a big turning point for the first time since 1946 after World War II. We've got politicians on both sides of the aisle that delight in coming up with ways to spend our money. And we've got inflation beat right now, and I wish Jay Powell a long, healthy life as and long tenure as Fed chairman, but 10 years, a lot could happen. Do I want my money tied up for 4%? How about the people that bought 10-year treasuries at 3%, 3.5%?
Okay, but the amount you would lose with a 10-year note at 4%, a bill at 4%, would be the difference between 4% and inflation. In equities, it could go down a lot more than 4%.
No one is saying that, John. The question is, how liquid do you want to be? 10 years is a long time. From my perspective, 10 years is getting to be a longer time every day.
I think I
have a finger on the pulse of our audience. So you can get close to somewhere over 4.4% on a 6-month T-bill right now. The risk with that is that 6 months from now, all is well, we've killed inflation, mm-hmm. and 6-month T-bills are yielding only 3% when it comes time to renew. But you're going to say, oh, great, inflation stopped, food prices have stopped going up. At least you have the choice. If you lock yourself up for 10 years, you have to take a loss of principal when you sell that note. If you say, oh, I want to get out, I need it for anything, to go on a cruise, to pay an unexpected long-term care bill, anything. If rates have gone up and you've locked yourself into a 10-year note, then you will get less than the $1,000 you paid for it when you take your money out early before maturity.
So that 4.3%, what am I going to do for 6 months? Where do I put that, Terry?
Oh, 6-month treasury bills. Let me take a closer look right now, and I will give you the exact. Every Monday, they auction off 6-month IOUs to fund our deficit. And if you go to terrysavage.com, there's a box on the right, scroll down a little bit, says how to buy treasury bills. We've been through this before. Lots of times bank CD rates are lower. Right now, they're fairly competitive for 6 months, but you can go buy treasury bills every Monday. There's a multi-billion dollar auction. We don't know the rate in advance. It is set by the markets bidding on trying to get that security.
Yeah. 708 says, I'm 64 years old. Can I sign up for Medicare Part A while still employed and then sign up for supplements B and D without penalty later?
Okay. Guess what, everybody? Medicare open enrollment is around the corner, and I've been sitting at my desk working on a series of columns, and I'm trying to put together even a little video for my website, Medicare, Everything You Should Know. To the person who asked that question, if you sign up for Medicare Part A while you are still working and your company does not require it, so first you ask your HR department, now that I'm Medicare eligible, must I sign up for Part A, which is free? Make sure you get the correct answer. No, Joe, you're covered by the company insurance until you retire. Then you go on Medicare. If you happen to sign up for Medicare Part A because you think, oh, well, that'd be a good idea, it means you can no longer contribute to a health savings account at work. So if you're, here are the rules. Let me try to start at the beginning. If you're fully covered by your company insurance, still working, stick with that. Unless the HR department says, you've got to sign up for Medicare Part A and we'll be the secondary payer. If you sign up for Medicare, any part of it, even the free Part A, you can no longer contribute to a health savings account.
Right. Terry, I want to ask you this. An HSA is different than a flex plan, right?
Yes. A flexible spending plan is something that you use or lose by the end of the year. So you run around in December buying diapers or birth control pills or hearing aids or glasses or whatever.
Yeah, I'm 64. I'm going to get birth control pills.
You're off birth control. Okay. But the health savings account is a wonderful kind of tax deferred savings that you can use to pay for healthcare expenses on a tax-free basis after you retire. So it's a wonderful thing. You don't want to be precluded from it if your company offers that kind of an option. It's like sort of like a healthcare IRA is what it is. But once you sign up for Medicare, you can no longer take that deduction and contribute.
Not for an HSA. We've got more business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Connect Wellness, a Chicago-based craft cannabis company, has raised $7 million in a second round of equity funding. The company has raised $14.5 million to date and plans to use the new cash infusion to increase production capacity and double its headcount, which currently stands at 26. The first funding round was used to build out its 22,000-square-foot facility in Franklin Park. Connect Wellness has also expanded product offerings, including edibles, pre-rolls, and concentrates. The company also plans to launch new brands and evaluate other expansion opportunities. Chicago software company Logic.io has raised $25 million in a Series B funding round. The startup helps companies with their e-commerce sales. The new funding will help Logic.io build ancillary products for its artificial intelligence-powered tech platform. That system combines product configuration, discovery, and recommendations with a transaction management hub that makes selling products and services easier. According to Chicago InNote, Logic.io's $15.7 million funding round last year was one of the largest fundraising rounds for Chicago startup in the second quarter of 2023. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Business of Food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And the man behind Flutie Flakes and other celebrity cereals is on the telephone.
That is correct. Roughly 20 years ago, the first Flutie Flakes were produced.
Tom Welge of Gilster Mary Lee. It's a big maker of store brand products from cereals to cake mixes. It has factories in southern Illinois and Missouri. And it is time again for high school kids across the state to try to win a custom branded cereal for their high school. And
this year, since we not only make cereal, we make a variety of other products, including mac and cheese, we decided to let the winner either create a crunch, a breakfast cereal, or make a Mac.
More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, high schoolers, it's an essay contest.
Yep, we're asking for 500 words.
And each year, the theme is about how the food manufacturing business and the consumption of food can be improved.
This year, we decided to craft the question around sustainability. Young people especially are very interested in that topic. And so we asked them to think about a product that they like, think about how they use it, how they enjoy it, and then answer a couple of questions. You know, what could we as manufacturers do to lessen the impact on the environment in the way we package it or present it? And two, what could they as a consumer do to lessen the impact on the environment when they use the product?
Entries have to be in by the end of the month. This is National Manufacturing Month, by the way, and the winner will be announced early next year. And then
we will create their product. We will work with the winning student, and they will be a part of the packaging design. They'll understand how we come up with the nutritional information.
And if the winner wants to create a crunch,
we will give them 2,500 boxes of it for their use.
Or if they decide to make a Mac,
we will give them 5,000 units of the mac and cheese.
If you're in high school in Illinois and you want in on this, ask your teacher. And if your teacher doesn't know about it,
they can email createacrunch, and that's crunch with a C, at gilstermarylee.com.
Create a crunch and make a Mac. On the food calendar, it's National Moldy Cheese Day, and it's National Take Your Parents to Lunch Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
More questions for you, Terry?
Sure, but let's not let this hour pass without a mention of the financial, personal, hugely personal, but huge financial tragedy that's about to befall so many people in Florida. Estimates of $150+ billion in losses. Of course, everybody who is insured will wind up paying higher premiums. That's been part of the inflation in homeownership prices, has been the high cost of insurance in Florida as the highest cost of any state, dramatically triple the cost of the average home insurance bill around the country. And many people couldn't afford insurance. And many will find that flood won't be exactly covered. Wind damage might, but wind-driven rain might not. So we are about overnight to see just a shocking example of devastation, financial and personal. It's not a financial topic. It's just very much on my mind with so many friends with homes down there, but more importantly, people who don't have second homes there, who live there, and their animals too.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Terry Savage, thank you for always being there. When the Fed drops the rate, how much will that affect CDs and money market rates at the banks?
Okay, so it's very interesting. I just read a great study by David Rosenberg, a great market analyst, who was responding to the fact that actually the 10-year Treasury note rate, which was down around a little over 3.5%, popped up over 4%. Historically, when the Fed cuts short-term rates, which it controls, there is a little jump up in longer-term rates, like the 10-year Treasury, and that rate affects mortgage rates. So it's not surprising to see those rates go up. Now, short-term rates are really interesting. The six-month T-bill, I just looked, right now it's 4.47%. Monday, that could change, but you get about 4.4% for that. Banks are very slow to raise their CD rates, typically, and very quick to drop them. So the six-month T-bill rate is set every Monday. You know what that rate is for complete safety, from IOUs from the government. And so if you're getting a CD rate that's significantly below 4.4%, you'd rather buy T-bills. How to buy T-bills? You buy them directly from the Treasury at treasurydirect.gov. And there's that article, again, on the homepage, terrysavage.com, how to buy T-bills. That's something you do. You can do that. It's really easy.
708 says, hey, Terry, this is the call or the question that we asked before the break. I have frozen my credit at all three bureaus. Now I'm getting emails that I should sign up for their services, and they all cost money. Are they worth it?
You know, primarily those services help you reestablish credit if it's been breached. But if you've frozen your credit, I'm going to give you another one. Some questions, John, I get asked so frequently that I've written up a little guide. And right below how to buy Treasury bills is identity theft do this. It, number one, tells you how to get to the bureaus to read your credit report free, to freeze your credit. If you will freeze your credit, then check your credit report. There are three major bureaus, so every 4 months you can get one of them for free. See who's been inquiring, make sure no new credit has been opened, and then check your online accounts. Your credit card may be connected with your bank account at least once a week, if not more. Go online, make sure nobody's charged anything on your credit card, nothing is amiss,
right,
and you don't need the protection.
I get those emails too, Terry, and I delete them because I've frozen my credit. That's all I wanted
exactly.
to do.
But you also want to be checking your credit report and sign up for something like, your bank gives you a free credit score, or Credit Karma will send you emails saying, oh, you did a good job, your score rose. And I always look and say, oh, it's up 2 points. Oh, because I paid my credit card bills.
All right. What about this? Hey, Terry Savage, if you put $10,000 in the 10-year bond, how much would you get at the end of the 10 years?
At the end of the 10 years, you will get $10,000. Now, if we've had 3% inflation, if we had 7% inflation, by the rule of 72, the value of your $10,000 of spending power would be cut in half. So you'll get $10,000 back from the U.S. government at the end of 10 years. If inflation comes back, rates go up, and in 4 years, 10-year treasuries in the open market, God forbid, are yielding 7%, and you wanted to sell your $10,000 4% T-bill, T-note, then you would only get back $700 or $800 because there'll be a discount because it's locked into a coupon that's lower than what the then current rate would be. So if you hold it to maturity, you get back your $10,000. The question of what the buying power is of that $10,000 is determined by inflation.
Right, but this question says, if I put $10,000 in 10 years, in a 10-year bond, how much do I have after 10 years?
Your $10,000 will drop back into your Treasury Direct account.
Yeah.
$10,000. But $10,000 10 years from now might not be quite what it is today in terms of buying power.
I think the question is, though, where's the interest on that then?
Oh, the interest on Treasury notes is paid every 6 months. That drops into your account.
So they're wondering,
T-bills, watch this.
Over the 10 years, they're wondering how much money then have they made?
They'll have made an interest check that they receive every 6 months. On Treasury notes, you get an interest check credited to your bank account every 6 months.
Okay.
Treasury bills, Okay, you buy $10,000 for 6 months. They only take $9,812 or whatever
it is
out of your account. And at maturity, you get back the full $10,000. You get, in effect, your interest up front because they don't take the full $10,000 out when you buy a T-bill. But Treasury notes pay interest semi-annually.
I was waiting for you to say that. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, and now we're out of time.
No.
Yes.
There must be something else to say. There is something else to say. Okay. There's something else to say. Hey, America, the stock market, despite Chinese stocks falling, despite everything going on in the world, our stock market is at all-time highs on the S&P. We're at Dow 42,400. Do not be lulled if you're about to be retired into the complacency of believing that this is a permanent amount of money that you will have. It's a great time to review. It's second great time is if you have to take your RMD before the end of the year, take it now. If you have to sell some stocks to get the RMD, this would be a great time to do it because we're at highs. Just a thought for the end of the day.
It's a good thought to close with. That's Terry Savage. TerrySavage.com. Let's talk next Wednesday.
Absolutely.